from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
We're looking at 6 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. Happy to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Here's what's happening.
The president didn't go there so that everyone would clap when he came in the room.
An olive branch met with sour grapes.
Michelle Bachmann said in her Tea Party response to President Obama, everybody knows we have the greatest health care system in the world. That is factually untrue.
A former president implies one Tea Party congresswoman may be drinking the Kool-Aid.
I think today is a great day for the future of AOL. I think it's a great day for Huffington Post.
You've got mail. Can it be a merger made in digital heaven?
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest breaking news.
And we are coming to you live from the nation's capital. Great to be with you, and nice to be with you on a Tuesday, Lori London.
Great to be with you, Chris Salcedo, and thanks to all of you for being with us on this Tuesday, February 8th. Well, thousands of protesters remain camped out in central Tahrir Square, many hoping for an appearance by Google executive Wael Ghanim, a 30-year-old marketing manager who emerged as the rallying point after he was released yesterday after 12 days in Egypt's custody. Demonstrators have said they will not enter negotiations with the regime before President Hosni Mubarak leaves.
Back here at home, during an appearance in the early nominating state of Iowa, former Minnesota Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty said that he could beat President Obama in 2012 while staying true to his social conservative values. Pawlenty said, if you're not willing to stand by your values, what's the point of doing it anyhow? Pawlenty, who has not officially entered the presidential race but is widely expected to run, was in Sioux City, Iowa to attend a lecture series sponsored by the socially conservative group Family Leader.
Well, the Obama administration proposing short-term relief to states saddled with unemployment insurance debt, coupled with a delayed increase in the income level used to tax employers for the aid to jobless. The administration plans to include the proposal in its budget plan next week.
Hey, sorry about that, Lori. Hey, you know what? We just talked about Tim Pawlenty firing some shots across the bow at Mr. Obama. Another guy not really happy with the state of America right now is former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. And last night, he expressed his own thoughts on the current state of affairs in our nation.
I think we're, as a country, in real trouble. I think we've had the longest period of over 9% unemployment since the Great Depression. The news last month that we have 45% African-American teenage unemployment should sober every American. We have real dangers in the world. The fact that 126 people have been indicted in the U.S. for plotting terrorism in the last 2 years. What's going on in Egypt, Afghanistan. None of this should make us feel good. And I think having somebody who tells the truth, you know, sometimes telling the truth is polarizing. Camus wrote that a man who says 2 plus 2 equals 4 can sometimes be killed because the authorities can't stand the truth. And so sometimes what Reagan did, and I frankly try to study Reagan and Thatcher and Lincoln because I think they were the great truth tellers of modern politics. Sometimes you tell the truth, people in the establishment go nuts because it's not the truth they want to hear.
Speaker of the House touching on a very important fact that gets lost in our politics sometimes is truth-telling sometimes can be painful, sometimes can be hurt. Some people classify it nowadays as hate speech when you tell the truth, but sometimes the truth needs to be told.
And the truth varies from
person to person?
Person to person and political party to political party, apparently. Well, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announcing yesterday that the Muslim Brotherhood is now involved in the dialogue about Egypt's future.
Today we learned that the Muslim Brotherhood has decided to participate, which suggests that they are now involved in the dialogue that we have encouraged. We're going to wait and see how this develops, but we've been very clear about what we expect.
Yeah, the Secretary of State coming out and basically confirming what we have all been told and been hearing reported the last couple of days here, that the Muslim Brotherhood was at the table. Now, what the fallout from that's going to be yet remains to be seen. We talked to a couple of guests right here on America's Radio News, Lori, that said, you know, basically they may be inconsequential, and a lot of folks here stateside are hoping that's true.
Right. Well, they are the only organized group at the moment. I've heard arguments recently that said there's a case to be made for slow transformation so the Democratic parties can have a chance to organize as well.
In the meantime, President Barack Obama paying a visit to the United States Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and he pleaded with the chamber to hire more workers.
Businesses also have a responsibility to America. I understand the challenges you face. I understand you are under incredible pressure to cut costs and keep your margins up. I understand the significance of your obligations to your shareholders and the pressures that are created by quarterly reports. I get it. But as we work with you to make America a better place to do business, I'm hoping that all of you are thinking what you can do for America. Ask yourselves what you can do to hire more American workers, the mutual responsibilities we have, to secure the future that we all share.
You think it's fair of the President of the United States to put the entire onus on the business owners? I understand the President really wants to see those unemployment numbers shrink. He wants to see people get jobs here in the United States, and I think a lot of people from across the aisle can agree with him. But if he's not willing to get out there and help business, and basically through his administration and some of the laws that he has passed, has put a lot of onerous a lot of onus on these businesses to actually come forth and pay for a lot of these programs. Do you actually think it's fair to him to ask even more of the business community unless he's willing to put something on the table from his administration?
I think he's looking at the old JFK philosophy when JFK said, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats, too many boats left behind, stuck in the mud.
Well, I think, you know what? And I think that for the most part, businesses are going, okay, we want to help. What is the government going to do to help us so we can get there? And I think they want a little tit for tat there. All right, coming up here on America's Radio News, we're going to talk to Patrice Hill, the chief economic correspondent for the Washington Times. As Mr. Obama, as we just told you, reaching out to business leaders, how did that go over on Capitol Hill and across the nation? We'll delve into that.
And former MSNBC host Keith Olbermann has a new home.
And a Democrat civil war. It's the Pelosi Democrats versus the Blue Dog Moderate Democrats. The story coming your way on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news so you don't have to. If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
Get ready to get informed. 19 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, February 8th.
You're right over there?
I'm great.
Okay.
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Doing good.
Americans' credit card debt rose for the first time since 2008, a possible sign they're growing more confident about the economy and opening their wallets a little wider. The surprising rise in December revolving credit as tracked by the Federal Reserve pushed up consumer credit outstanding by $6.1 billion. Economists surveyed by Dow Jones Newswire said forecast the Fed data would show consumer credit rising by only $2.5 billion. Consumer credit spending, of course, is a big part of the economy.
Allegations flying around Capitol Hill. It's the Pelosi Democrats versus the moderate Democrats. In the wake of all this, nine-term Representative Jane Hartman, a Democrat from California, announced her resignation yesterday, a move that is being seen by some experts as a sign that the centrist was chafing under a more limited role in the newly Republican House. She's leaving to take over as president of Woodrow Wilson International Center of Scholars. It's a think tank that tries to connect the world of research with public policy. And yesterday on Fox News, a Blue Dog Democrat, Jason Altmaier, talked with Neil Cavuto on how the Blue Dog Democrats are being all but ignored by the leadership in the Democrat Party.
Well, every couple wants their family there when they tie the knot. But for Ahmed Zafan and Ola Abdel Hamid, it was the family of protesters wanting to topple Egypt's president. They held their wedding ceremony in Cairo's Tahrir Square. Thousands of protesters were around them. Onlookers cheered and whistled when it was announced over the speakers that they had been married Sunday.
All right, let's head over to America's Radio Newsline. No, not yet. We're still waiting to get our guests there. That's all right. We can continue to talk a little bit about more. We're going to talk about with Patrice Hill once we get her on the phone line about this meeting of the Chamber of Commerce yesterday. I want the folks out there to be able to hear what President Obama had to say to some of the businesses there. Here's President Obama. He told the chamber that the workers must share in the corporate profits.
Recognize that some common sense regulations often will make sense for your businesses, as well as your families, as well as your neighbors, as well as your coworkers. Of course, your responsibility goes beyond recognizing the need for certain standards and safeguards. If we're fighting to reform the tax code and increase exports to help you compete, the benefits can't just translate into greater profits and bonuses for those at the top. They have to be shared by American workers, who need to know that expanding trade and opening markets will lift their standards of living as well as your bottom line. We can go back to the kind of economy and culture that we saw in the years leading up to the recession, where growth and gains in productivity just didn't translate into rising incomes and opportunity for the middle class.
So now we head over to America's Radio Newsline, and that's where Patrice Hill is standing by, chief economic correspondent for the Washington Times. And Patrice, there's the president of the United States, and I said this yesterday, being wholly consistent with his outlook that that even though folks that are working for companies have no vested stake in the companies they're working for, as the president demonstrated in his deal with the auto companies, that they somehow deserve a stake in those businesses.
Oh, well, there are some companies that do give workers a stake. They're called employee-owned companies, and there are some companies that do give their... even Enron gave their workers stock, so it's not that unusual for companies to have a stake or for employees to have a stake in a company.
Yeah, well, an ownership stake, and I think that's what a lot of conservatives cried foul when the unions, the auto workers' unions, were given a share of General Motors in this settlement deal when really these people had no ownership stake in these companies to begin with.
Yeah, some people think that's a mistake, that the unions over the years should have bargained for more of a stake in the company because it gives them a better perspective on keeping the company profitable and keeping it competitive and so on than they have when they just have a hostile or confrontational relationship with the company.
So what do you make of Mr. Obama's plead with businesses that they have to start sharing more of their bottom line with their workers?
I actually didn't take it quite that way, that, you know, that he's saying they have to share profits. I think what he wants is for the companies to use the profits. Well, there's two things that he wants. You know, when a company makes more money, they can use some of that money to pay their workers higher wages. You know, they can use that to give their workers better wages and benefits, and that's one thing he wants. And the other thing is, when they're making brimming profits like they are right now, they can hire new workers. So I think that's what he was encouraging them to do, to use those profits, because companies are very profitable right now. There's no question that corporations have got something like $2 trillion worth of cash profits just sitting on their books unused.
So are you saying, you know, he's looking to try to have that translate more to the middle class?
Exactly, yeah. And that's not an outlandish thing. That just happens in the ordinary course of business, usually in the United States, but it's not happening right now.
And so what about the whole issue of regulation? I know there's an argument about too much regulation, but isn't that also matched by the dangers of too little?
Well, you know, we certainly had in the case of financial regulation, I don't know if you could say there were not enough laws on the books. Maybe there weren't the best laws on the books, but there also was not diligence by the regulators to use the laws that they had to curb the real serious excesses that occurred in the financial market. So that's what he's talking about, I believe, when he says the dangers of not enough regulation. You know, so but they're definitely, you know, can go either way. And we did just experience a serious failure in our financial markets that was in part due to not very vigorous enforcement of the laws of consumer protection and other laws that are already even on the books. And, of course, now they've passed a much more serious set of regulations that is, some people would say, are kind of an overreaction to what happened.
All right, Patrice Hill, chief economic correspondent for the Washington Times. Thanks a lot for coming on with us, being on America's Radio News. All right, coming up here in the next segment, Obama, President Obama, calling for $53 billion for high-speed rail. We'll give you the details.
And Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg apparently has a stalker.
And Dr. Steven Zunes, professor of politics and chairman of the Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco, going to talk to him about what's going on over in Egypt. It seems that the Mubarak administration is standing firm, and they may weather this current uprising in the nation of Egypt. We'll talk to him about that and other goings-on as the breaking news continues to roll in here to America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks. Stay with us.
The heartbeat of America
beats first
right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News. Reliable and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. It's America's Radio News, coming to you live from the nation's capital. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Here's what's happening.
The president didn't go there so that everyone would clap when he came in the room.
An olive branch met with sour grapes.
Michelle Bachmann said in her Tea Party response to President Obama, everybody knows we have the greatest health care system in the world. That is factually untrue.
A former president implies one Tea Party congresswoman may be drinking the Kool-Aid.
I think today is a great day for the future of AOL. I think it's a great day for Huffington Post.
You've got mail. Can it be a merger made in digital heaven?
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest breaking news.
Most of the nation bracing for more rough weather. In the meantime, here in the nation's capital, the sun is shining. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in Lower London.
Welcome, Chris Salcedo. Great to be with you and great to have all of you with us. It is sunny. It's nice to see the sunshine.
You bet.
Well, President Hosni Mubarak set up a committee today to recommend constitutional amendments seeking to meet longtime popular demands as a standoff with protesters seeking his ouster enters its third week. Mubarak's decrees were announced on state TV by Vice President Omar Suleiman, who also said Mubarak will set up a separate committee to monitor implementation of all proposed reforms. But the government has so far refused protesters' demand that Mubarak step down immediately.
President Obama calling for a six-year, $53 billion investment in high-speed rail as he seeks to use infrastructure spending to jumpstart job creation. An initial $8 billion investment will be part of the budget plan Obama is set to release yesterday. If Congress approves that plan, the money would go forward for improving trains and travel up to 250 miles per hour and connecting existing rail lines to new projects. The White House wouldn't say where the rest of the money for the program would come from.
Well, Britain's head of civil service says the previous government there did all it could to help Libya win the release of the only man convicted in the 1988 Pan Am bombing in Scotland, though it insisted the decision was made entirely by Scottish officials. Abdelbaset al-Megrahi, the only man convicted in the terrorist attack, was granted a compassionate release from a Scottish prison in August of 2009 on the grounds that he was suffering from prostate cancer and would soon die. He is still alive.
Let's move on over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Dr. Stephen Sunez. He's the professor of politics and chairman of the Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. Dr. Sunez, welcome to America's Radio News.
Welcome.
Great to be on.
Hey, wanted to talk to you about some reports coming out of the region out there in Egypt today that the Mubarak administration is going to actually weather this storm of all the protests, that the protests are actually losing steam. What are you hearing and what do you make of this?
Not to my knowledge. The numbers are high again today. They are decentralizing the protests somewhat. They're in a lot of smaller provincial cities. But they're also being more targeted, going up to government ministries and the like. We're seeing more defections by leading intellectuals. Workers on the Suez Canal are going on strike, you know, which obviously would have quite a bit of impact. The government is still making more and more concessions, which both are a sign of weakness, I think, but also I think embolden the protesters to to demand more. So I think it's far from over.
Now, what do you think about this whole idea that Mr. Mubarak is making that, hey, if I'm to resign right now without a transition plan in place, that there will be a lot of chaos and possibly open a door to a small faction that called the Muslim Brotherhood to exert more power in the region? Don't you think there ought to be a little bit of a game plan moving forward as they march in towards September and to Mubarak's eventual step down?
Well, the chaos is because he's still in power, and people don't want to accept that. And given that Mubarak and his henchmen have rigged every single election in the past 3 decades, they can hardly be trusted to guide the transition to democracy. Furthermore, the best breeding grounds for Islamic extremism is dictatorship. When people have the right to address political grievances through democratic means, they're much less likely to support fundamentalists, extremists, and terrorists.
And there's been a lot of, I don't know if you want to call it fear-mongering or if the fears are legitimate about this group, the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, they are the only organized group, but at the same time, they're only a small fraction of the people support that group there. And obviously this protest this uprising was brought upon by these young people who are demanding democracy. So what is your take on this whole fear of this Muslim Brotherhood taking control?
It's a ruse. They're definitely a minority group, and the largely secular yet youthful pro-democracy protesters see the Brotherhood and its aging leadership as out of touch with their day-to-day realities as the regime in many respects. In any case, though, over the decades, the Muslim Brotherhood has spawned some extremist groups that split away from them. The Brotherhood itself has been increasingly moderate. If they were in assuming they'd be in politics in a democratic Egypt, I think they'd be similar to what we see in the Muslim parties like in Jordan and in Morocco that participate in the parliament there. Definitely a conservative force, but not one that would support extremism.
So if you had to read the tea leaves, what would you say?
Well, I think it's maybe a protracted struggle. I don't see Mubarak leaving in the next few days, but there's no way he's going to last until September. The big question is whether there will be a genuine democratic transition, or he'll just try to pass it on to Suleiman or other generals who have a pretty poor record in terms of human rights and democracy as well.
We're talking with Dr. Stephen Souness. He's a professor of politics at the chairman of Middle Eastern Studies in the University of San Francisco. And Mr. Souness, you made the point that you didn't think it was likely that the Muslim Brotherhood, it was kind of a ruse, I think is how you put it, that the Muslim Brotherhood will have any influence in the region, in Egypt rather, as the government is being formed, this new transitional government being formed. But doesn't history tell us something different with what happened in Iran, with the Bolshevik revolution there? I mean, history is littered with tyrannical minorities taking over the majority of a country. How can you say with the utmost confidence that that won't be the case here with the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, the big difference is that civil society in Egypt is much stronger than it was in Iran in 1979 and certainly in Russia in 1917. Unlike Iran, you don't have this hierarchy of Shia clergy in terms of the Ayatollahs with their, you know, with their kind of organization that could seize power. The economic class, the Bazaaris, who side with the Islamists in Iran, you know, they're mostly dependent on free trade and on tourism. So, you know, they would certainly be unlike Iran, would opt towards the pro-democracy elements. And for my visits in Egypt and having a pretty good sense of the demographic and political trends, Egypt would be one of the last places I would see in that part of the world that would slide back to authoritarianism if they were given a chance at true democracy.
Dr. Stephen Souness, professor of politics and chairman of the Middle Eastern Studies at the University of San Francisco. Great perspectives today, sir. Thanks for coming on to America's Radio News.
My pleasure.
All right, coming up next, snow days, a thing of the past. The learning doesn't stop when Mother Nature hits. We'll tell you that story.
And the price of protest, 297 deaths so far.
And going to confession, there's an app for that. Believe it or not, this story is wild. It's America's Radio News. We'll tell you the details coming up next. This is where the nation's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
You can read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now, right here on America's Radio News. Glad to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, February 8th. Well, three teenage boys were shot to death in the Mexican border city of Ciudad Juarez, at least two of them U.S. citizens and high school students in Texas. The boys were killed Saturday while looking at cars in a dealership in the city across the border from El Paso. One was found inside a white Jeep Cherokee, the other two in the courtyard. No leads on suspects or a motive.
So much for snow days. Despite winter storms that forced schools and colleges across the nation to cancel classes, tech-savvy educators are turning to Facebook, podcasts, and other web tools to keep students on track. In Chicago suburbs, Lake Forest College professor Holly Swires uploaded videos of her anthropology lecture last week on YouTube and kept an email line open while Chicago absorbed 20 inches of snow and its public schools had their first snow day since 1999. University of New Hampshire professor Kent Chaplin gave an electromagnetics lecture live, audio only, while he was still in his pajamas.
Wow. Well, a meat producer in Southern California recalling 3,100-plus pounds of ground beef they fear may be contaminated with E. coli, according to the USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service spokesperson. No illnesses have been reported from the bulk ground beef and patties sold by Pico Rivera-based American Food Service.
Well, attention all you Catholics out there. Confession. There's an app for that, an iPhone app aimed at helping Catholics through confession and encouraging lapsed followers back to the faith, has been sanctioned by the Catholic Church in the United States. Confession, a Roman Catholic app thought to be the first to be approved by a church authority, walks Catholics through the sacrament and contains what the company behind the program describes as a personalized examination of conscience for each user.
Wow. Holy cow. Wow.
Holy moly.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, the judging panel for Simon Cowell's U.S. version of The X Factor yet to be set, and he's suggesting Paula Abdul is in the running.
Hmm.
Oy vey. During a teleconference, Cowell reaffirming he's a massive fan of Abdul, his former American Idol colleague, but he's still deciding who will join him in judging his new talent contest. And the panel won't be announced for a few more weeks.
Hey, our pals on America's Morning News, John McCaslin and Amy Holmes, they caught up with Egyptian ambassador to the United States, Sameh Shoukry, who said that Christians need not be concerned about repression in a post-Mubarak regime and stressed that the situation is an Egyptian problem and not an American problem.
Mr. Ambassador, good morning. America's Morning News. How concerned should your nation's Coptic Christians be without President Mubarak in power?
Among the demonstrators are segments of the Christian population, and I believe Egypt has lived for many years and with within many administrations and governments with tranquility between its Muslim and Coptic citizens. So
sure.
I wouldn't believe that they would be subjected to any form of repression or discrimination.
Sure. Why do you think the stance from the United States government has changed so quickly from a few weeks ago, calling President Mubarak a staunch ally, to now calling for transitioning your country?
Well, I think you should direct that to the administration. For the Egyptians, this is an Egyptian process undertaken by Egyptians, and it is now incorporating all segments of the political spectrum, and I think we will hear some very positive results.
Christians on the ground out there in Egypt have been very concerned about what's going on. Mubarak, for all of his detractors, and you know, for all intents and purposes, this man is a dictator. But Christians have enjoyed the ability to worship freely in Egypt up to this point. So now the big concern has been put to rest, by the U.S. ambassador here from Egypt. But I don't know. We'll all see how this turns out.
Well, it was interesting to see the Christians and Muslims protesting together yesterday, some holding crosses,
yep,
some holding the Quran, and that was nice to see. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange spoke to the media yesterday saying he will be exonerated in court on his rape charges.
For the past 5.5 months, we have been in a condition where a black box has been applied to my life. And on the outside of that black box has been written the word rape. That box is now, thanks to an open court process, being opened. And I hope over the next day we will see that that box is in fact empty and has nothing to do with the words that are on the outside of it. We have seen that today We have seen that today, and I would like to thank my supporters and my lawyers for continuing to help me. A process like this surely lets you understand who your friends are.
The allegations came out early that these were trumped up charges just to get this guy to stop doing what he was doing to classified documents in the United States and from other countries.
But these two women, apparently, they're legitimate. They had legitimate issues with some encounters with him that he wasn't quite on the level about. So really, maybe the two really don't have anything to do. And he's trying to make it so that they're connected, that it's all just because of his WikiLeaks.
And he had a heckler. I mean, you know you've arrived when you have a heckler in the background, huh? All right. The Sarah Palin bashing continues. In an interview with CBS News, liberal screenwriter Aaron Sorkin took some more shots at Sarah Palin, calling her dumb and in need of therapy.
I have a big problem with people who glamorize dumbness and demonize education and intellect. And I'm giving a pretty good description of Sarah Palin right now.
He seems to be having a second career these days, going after Sarah Palin. In an essay for the Huffington Post, he called her a witless bully.
Sarah Palin, she needs a therapist, okay? We need the smartest guys, the best PhDs around, to be solving these problems. I don't have any patience for the glamorization of dumbness.
Dumb? Okay to use as long as you're referring to a conservative?
I'm not sure that would be the word I would choose.
Yeah. The double standard from
regardless of how you feel, I think, exactly. maybe let's keep it a little more civil here.
Yeah, would Mr. Sorkin advocate somebody using the adjective dumb for somebody they disagreed politically, say, with the President of the United States? I can't get behind somebody actually throwing out and doing the name calling. If you want to call her out on a policy, go right ahead, Mr. Sorkin. Demonstrate your own intelligence and actually talk about an issue for a change instead of making personal attacks on somebody.
Okay, calm down, Chris. Calm down.
It just really bugs the daylights out of me to sit there and call somebody stupid when you're sitting there basing it on a personality conflict. Talk about her policies.
Well, not think she's intelligent. I'm not disputing whether she is or she isn't. I'm just saying maybe there's a better way to say it.
But let's talk about some substance then instead of attacking somebody's character. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, Chris, take it easy.
Jeez.
CNN's Joy Behar sat down with none other than Weird Al Yankovic. Okay, let's not go there with the dumb thing now. Who talked about all the musicians he has parodied over the years, and those rock stars who weren't too amused.
Michael Jackson gave you permission.
You know, he was a huge supporter early on. I mean, back before Eat It, I was really more of a cult figure. Very few people knew, you know, who or what this Weird Al guy was about. And we thought it would be highly improbable that Michael Jackson would give us his blessing. But, you know, we thought, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. And he actually had a great sense of humor. And there exists somewhere in this universe a contract with my signature next to Michael's saying we're the co-writers of Eat It. Once I had his stamp of approval, a lot of other artists were like, well, if Michael thinks it's okay, maybe it's okay.
So it shows you that Michael was casual about his about giving it over. It's nice.
He had a great sense of humor, yeah.
Right. But Paul McCartney said no. Why?
Well,
Led Zeppelin said no.
Well, okay. Paul McCartney, let's start with that. He turned me down for a parody years ago. I didn't want to do a parody of Live and Let Die called Chicken Pot Pie.
Uh-huh.
Brilliant, I know.
For Prince, you could have done Little Red Pervert.
I could. but back to Paul, because I don't want any to besmirch Paul's name, because Paul was a great sport. He said, I'd love for you to do a parody, but don't do anything about the consumption of animal flesh, because I'm a vegetarian, and, you know, that's not cool. And I couldn't think of a better idea. In fact, I got to direct Paul McCartney last year. I did a 3D short film called Al's Brain in 3D. Paul was nice enough to make a cameo, so if I do nothing else in life, I can proudly say that I've directed Paul McCartney.
As God is my witness, my first concert ever was a Weird Al Yankovic concert out in San Diego. I just had to say that. Coming up on America's Radio News, we're going to talk to Christina Bellatoni, the Associate Politics Editor for Roll Call.
And a mid-air collision, close call.
And the president didn't exactly wow them at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Details coming up as America's Radio News rolls on.
From the nation's capital,
If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
6 minutes past the top of the hour. This is where you can hear about it now instead of reading about it tomorrow. It's America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday, February 8th. Here's what's happening.
This is one of those moments in its history where the Egyptian people must themselves determine their future.
The delicate dance continues.
It is good to be here today at the Chamber of Commerce. I'm here in the interest of being more neighborly.
President Obama tries to thaw chilly relations with America's businesses.
That's when our life or death struggle began.
Reporters relive their brutal attacks in Egypt.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. Nice day here in the nation's capital, where we're coming to you live right now. Lori London, nice to see you.
Great to see you, Chris Salcedo, and thanks to all of you for being with us. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Thousands of protesters remain camped out in central Tahrir Square, many hoping for an appearance by Google executive Wahil Ghonim, a 30-year-old marketing manager who's emerged as a rallying point after being released Monday after 12 days in custody. The demonstrators have said they will not enter negotiations with the regime until President Hosni Mubarak leaves. Meanwhile, U.S.-based Human Rights Watch reporting 2 weeks of clashes have now claimed close to 300 lives, and they say the number is likely to rise.
Politico is reporting on this. The good news for President Obama and his visit to the Chamber of Commerce yesterday, they broke out into applause twice during his speech. The bad news, they clapped just twice in 35 minutes of that address. Obama himself acknowledged early that he doesn't have the best relationship with the Chamber of Commerce. The first applause line came halfway through when Mr. Obama's remarks, as he spoke about opening up new markets and selling more of American goods in other countries. The only other applause line for Obama came at the end, when Mr. Obama once again hit the right note in calling for bringing jobs back to the United States.
Well, the Obama administration poised to announce the results of a 10-month investigation into whether faulty electronics played a role in Toyota vehicles' sudden unintentional acceleration and other safety problems. The Transportation Department says it will issue the findings of its study, which has examined whether electronics or electromagnetic interference played a factor in the Japanese automaker safety recalls.
Well, the fallout from President Obama's interview with Fox News' Bill O'Reilly on Super Bowl Sunday continues. And now House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi weighing in, saying it was inappropriate for Mr. O'Reilly to ask the president about the people who, quote, hate him.
Does it disturb you that so many people hate you? I mean, it's a serious question.
You know, the truth is the people, and I'm sure previous presidents would say the same thing, whether it was Bush or Clinton or Reagan or anybody. The people who dislike you don't know you.
They hate you.
It's
what
jarring.
Did you think?
Yeah, it's jarring is the right word.
I didn't think
yeah.
the word hate should be used at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was growing up, we never hated people.
Yes. But you weren't allowed to say hate, and you couldn't say shut up.
That's right. Yeah. And so to hear this used in the presence of the President of the United States, I think we all have to recognize that while we may disagree with people and while we may think they are wrong,
yes.
we shouldn't think that they are bad, and we shouldn't ever use the word hate in context of people, but unless you're talking about Hitler or somebody
yes,
like that.
Yes,
but
yes.
but this was, just seeing it again, I saw it in the news last night, but just seeing it again, I thought it was a completely inappropriate question. Of course, beautifully handled by the president.
Beautifully.
Yeah, and she didn't seem to object when Mr. O'Reilly asked former President Bush the same question.
I don't like the word hate, Chris.
I don't like the word either.
It's,
but
it's
I'm,
not,
I'm.
I don't. I agree. It's not appropriate.
I mean, just don't remember.
You could say maybe you know. What do you say to all the people that are not happy with you yeah. or don't like your policies, but hate?
Well, there are some people out there that hate the president the same way that
I understand.
He asked Mr. Bush the same question. I don't recall Nancy Pelosi standing up and saying that's inappropriate to ask President Bush about the people that hate him. They had people making movies about assassinating him, for goodness sake, George W. Bush. So, I mean, it seems a little disingenuous on the speaker's part, very selective in her outrage. If it's going to apply to one president, Ms. Pelosi, it should apply to both.
Well, Senator Lindsey Graham. Senator Lindsey Graham is telling CNN he doesn't know yet who the best Republican horse to back in 2012 will be, but he says President Obama, he believes, is beatable.
I'm for the most conservative person who is electable. We're going to have
and
a
that
real
would be who?
Well, I don't know yet. That's a you're good at your job. I really don't know. You know, Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina tell a story of the Republican primary world. Iowa's a caucus state. New Hampshire is sort of a purple primary. South Carolina is a conservative state, but you have a lot of people coming into the primary. Conservatism sells. It's a center-right nation, but the nominee for the party is going to have to win the independent voter at the end of the day. They're paying attention to Republicans because of the overreach by Democrats. We're back in the game because our Democratic friends sort of blew it, and we got a chance now to reengage with the American people. The health care debate, I think, will define 2012. I want to repeal it and start over. Foreign policy could become a good issue. The detainee problems this country faces have not really been addressed. Reading terrorists their Miranda rights, things like that can shape up the debate between the Republican nominee and President Obama. I think he is beatable, but for our party to win, our nominee has got to get those independent voters who are center-right. They're not in a right ditch. They're not in the left ditch. So we'll see what happens.
And Democrats, you know, didn't think George W. Bush would get a second term either because there was so much aberration for the Iraq war, but yet he did get reelected. So, you know, the jury's still out.
Yeah, and statistically, you know, the presidents that are involved in wars or in serious conflicts, the American people don't like changing course, you know, when there's serious consequences for the country going on. So I think that history is on Mr. Obama's side at this point, though I will say I think the focus is going to be on the economy. I kind of disagree with Mr. Graham. I don't think Obamacare is going to be the center of the 2012 election, although if they drag this out,
I think it could be, Chris.
Yeah, the Supreme Court, if they actually drag it out, it may. Democratic Pennsylvania Congressman Jason Altmaier, he represents the Blue Dog Democrats in Congress, and he told Fox News Channel's Neil Cavuto that it's not always a bowl of cherries when dealing with Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
I can't speak for the entire group. I can speak for me. I think Leader Pelosi is accessible. I don't necessarily think that she agrees with the views that we have as a
group. Do any of your members, yourself included, can you get on her calendar?
I think we could get on her calendar. The issue for me, we've had, again, as individuals, we've had meetings with her. I can't speak for the group. I don't feel like we're on the same page with the direction of the party and the direction of policy for the country.
What does she say
moving forward? Well, there's a difference of opinion on why we had the outcome in the election that we did.
And with the resignation of Jane Harman yesterday, she's that Democrat from California, and she was a Pelosi rival in the United States Congress. So, man, this is lending some fuel
to
that.
It's interesting because Pelosi was such a polarizing figure that I was very surprised that the Democrats kept her on as a House leader, given the state of what happened in the election.
Appropriately put, very polarizing, and now it seems to be landing home with the Democrats in Congress. All right, America's Radio News continues. We're talking next to Christina Bellatoni, Associate Politics Editor for Roll Call. We'll talk about the president reaching across to business and trying to extend that olive branch coming up next.
The big stories and the hot topics are all we talk about. Keep it right here, and you won't miss a thing on America's Radio News. For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
Get ready to get informed. You're tuned into America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Well, a packed American Airlines jumbo jet and two military C-17 cargo planes avoided catastrophe after they were mistakenly sent to the same altitude by controllers at New York's Air Traffic Control Center. A collision alarm in the cockpit of the American Airlines Boeing 777 sounded, warning pilots to descend. They did, averting a possible collision, but the close call on January 20th, about 8 miles southeast of New York City, of course, is now under investigation by the NTSB.
A new poll says anybody but Obama. Republicans would rather have a presidential candidate who can beat Barack Obama in 2012 than one they agree with on issues. That's according to that poll. 68% of Republicans and GOP-leaning independents surveyed for a CNN Opinion Research Corporation poll said they prefer a nominee who stands a real shot at winning in the general election, but with whom they may have ideological disagreements.
Well, former MSNBC host Keith Olbermann confirming he is indeed moving to Current TV, the network co-founded by Al Gore, sometime later in 2011. He made the announcement that he will be having a news and opinion program on Current. He'll become the network's chief news officer and will also have an equity stake in Current Media. The presence of Olbermann, who helped usher MSNBC into prominence with his nightly show Countdown, may provide the network with a boost.
Let's head on over to America's Radio Newsline. And standing by is Christina Bellatoni, the associate politics editor for Roll Call. Christina, welcome to America's Radio News.
Welcome.
Hi.
President Obama making a visit to the United States Chamber of Commerce yesterday. I think, judging by the amount of applause lines in the 35-minute speech, he was only applauded tepidly a couple of times. So how do you think he was received by the business community in general?
Well, you know, Obama has not been anti-business. I think, you know, you've actually seen a lot of progressive backlash against him, you know, pointing out that he's been fairly friendly to business. You know, particularly you look at who he staffed his White House with. That's something that's actually drawing a lot of compliments from Republicans on Capitol Hill. So I think in the end, you know, what he actually said wasn't anything that they would really take issue with, but this, you know, these are partisan times, and he's trying to appear bipartisan when really there's not very much they can actually accomplish together when they don't agree on, you know, really tax reform. The one sort of area agreement is going to be trade deals, I think.
Is it partisanship, or do they have some real legitimate concerns, the business community, with the amount of burdens being placed on them by this administration? Are you saying there's no substance to what they their objections and the reason why they're saying, hey, Mr. Obama, throw us a bone here?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm certainly not going to gauge it by applause lines, but I do think that when you look at some of the regulations that he says, you know, not every regulation is a bad regulation. And, you know, so we're going to take a look at some things that could be done away with, and we're going to keep a lot of things that are in place.
Well, that was my point I was actually going to ask you. Is every regulation bad? Because, I mean, you know, some may be burdensome on business, but a lot of regulations are welcome in our lives. Child labor laws, drug companies, you know, buying, you know, investing in financial markets, right?
Yeah, that's basically exactly what Obama said yesterday. And, you know, we had a story on the front page of today's Roll Call looking at, you know, Daryl Issa asked everyone in the business community to tell him what regulations they don't like. He got 1,600 pages back, you know, from everybody from the Chamber of Commerce to, you know, small fishing companies in Florida. So it's really a matter of, you know, everybody wants to see regulations go away because they think that would be less inhibiting to business, but, you know, certainly that's not what this president is really about.
Well, I'm unaware of any Republican advocating the repeal of child care laws and all the, and again, to basically say that to ask for regulations to be eased, you're actually, it's tantamount to saying, oh, we want to get child labor back in. I don't think that's an intellectually honest argument, but businesses are very clear, especially with the president's signature piece of legislation, Obamacare. It's a $1 trillion burden, not only on the taxpayer of the United States, but a lot of the heavy lifting is done by businesses, and there's a lot of uncertainty with this law, and businesses are throwing their hands up in the air saying, please, somebody help us out. This law is not good for American business.
Sure, and, you know, what the president is sort of turning that back around on them and saying, you all, you know, businesses are sitting on a lot of cash right now that they are not using to hire people, and we can sure use your help. So I think it's a matter of they're not necessarily going to agree on fundamental principles, you know.
But what has the president given? Let me ask you that. What is he's asking the business community, hey, help me out, help get some people hired, get off your money, get off your $1.8 trillion that you have on the sidelines right now, nearly 2 trillion, and help me out by hiring some folks. Where is the White House stepping forward and saying, hey, we want to help you be successful? Where is he doing that?
Well, you could take a look at the massive Republican-supported tax reform plan that passed right before the end of the year in the lame duck Congress. You know, that was certainly something that was regularly applauded by businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can also look at a lot of the incentives that he put into the stimulus bill. You know, this has become a political issue, but certainly, you know, he's put in a lot of, you know, grants for development, you know, looking at, he's put this big emphasis on science and technology. You know, people are making a lot of money off of clean energy for as much as it gets made fun of. You know, these are businesses that are thriving, you know, particularly in Silicon Valley. And, you know, in some of the other areas, you know, Boston and So this is an area where he has offered plenty. But again, like I said, it's a political season, and particularly as the presidential race heats up, I would not expect, you know, these two groups to be BFF.
Christina Bellatoni, the Associate Politics Editor for Roll Call. Thanks a lot for being on. Great perspective today on America's Radio News.
Thanks.
All right, coming up, one state is moving to nullify Obamacare. We'll tell you which one.
And thousands of protesters continue to hold their ground against the Mubarak government in Egypt.
And David Rubin, author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. He comes up with his comments next. Stay tuned. It's America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News. When we turn on the light, the insects run and hide. This is America's Radio News.
Well, if you're looking to get informed, you've come to the right place. It's called America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Welcome to the show. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Here's what's happening.
This is one of those moments in its history where the Egyptian people must themselves determine their future.
The delicate dance continues.
It is good to be here today at the Chamber of Commerce. I'm here in the interest of being more neighborly.
President Obama tries to thaw chilly relations with America's businesses.
That's when our life or death struggle began.
Reporters relive their brutal attacks in Egypt.
We're circling the globe and sweeping the nation to bring you all the latest news. And this is where the nation's news breaks, coming to you live from the nation's capital. It's America's Radio News. Hi, Lori London.
Hello, Chris Salcedo. Thanks to all of you for being with us. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Well, the protests are gaining ground again in Egypt. Thousands have remained camped out in central Tahrir Square. As more people pour in, the demonstrators have said they will not enter negotiations with the regime before President Mubarak leaves. U.S.-based Human Rights Watch reporting now 2 weeks of clashes have claimed close to 300 lives, and they say the number is likely to rise.
And even though Idaho's attorney general says it's unconstitutional, the Idaho legislature is moving forward with a bill that would declare the new federal health care law, otherwise known as Obamacare, null and void within the state's boundaries. You can liken it to ratcheting up the battle against Obamacare, as critics refer to it. The most common line of attack now being taken by 26 states is to sue the federal government, saying it violates the Constitution to force people to buy health insurance by 2014 or face penalties.
Well, the Obama administration proposing short-term relief to states saddled with unemployment insurance debt, coupled with a delayed increase to the income level used to tax employers for the aid to the jobless. The administration plans to include the proposal in its budget plan next week.
Let's move on over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is David Rubin. He's the author of The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. Mr. Rubin, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today that this transition of power that seems to be moving forward, and now we're getting reports out of the region that maybe the Mubarak administration is going to weather these protests, actually stay in power and leave possibly in September by the time the next elections come up. What's your take on all this?
I'm not sure exactly what the Secretary of State is talking about and, you know, about how democracy is on its way in Egypt. I heard an interview with Obama yesterday, President Obama, saying that referring to the Muslim Brotherhood, that strains of their ideology are anti-U.S.,
Mr. Rubin, you know what? We have a really bad connection here, man. We're going to try to reestablish something with you. We're going to go on and talk about some other news. We'll try to reconnect with you here in a moment. Maybe we can get a better cell. Back here at home, as we depart from Egypt and come back here to local politics, former Vermont governor and Democratic National Committee chairman Howard Dean, he provided some color commentary on the interview the other night with Bill O'Reilly and the President of the United States just before the Super Bowl. He shared his own philosophy on redistributing wealth.
When social inequality and wage inequality gets to too large, you have social instability. We are at a position now where we're in trouble in this country. I wouldn't say we could be Egypt next week, but the people really are disillusioned. The president missed a chance. O'Reilly laid out a proposition that is, we shouldn't have redistribution. That's what governments do, is redistribute. The argument is not whether they should redistribute or not, or the question is how much we should redistribute. If you had no redistribution, we'd be back before the Magna Carta with a king. So the purpose of government is to make sure that capitalism works for everybody, not just for the people who can run roughshod, as they do often in Washington by throwing, and as the chamber has, by throwing their money around. So that he missed that one because O'Reilly laid out, framed a proposition as the right wing so often does. President didn't see the frame and answered the question straight up. No, it's government's job to redistribute. The question is, how much are we going to distribute? Otherwise, we wouldn't have Social Security, we wouldn't have Medicare, and we wouldn't build roads.
I'm looking through my pocket constitution right here. I'm trying to find the part where it says government's job is to redistribute wealth that other people, to give wealth from where people earn it, to give it to other. You know what? I can't find that anywhere in the Constitution. Maybe Howard Dean needs to go back and have a look at that.
Well, I think what he was trying to say is that we need to not necessarily continue to accept the status quo, that our entire economy, is less competitive. We need to be more competitive.
Well, I don't think any argument there from the business community.
Well, President Obama visited and addressed the U.S. Chamber of Commerce yesterday afternoon and took time out for a private conversation with Chamber President Tom Donahue.
We're honored that he came to the chamber. We had a great crowd. I thought that he added a little bit of levity with a very serious recognition that the number one job for both sides of the park there are putting people back to work. And I appreciate that he came over to talk about those issues and our economy and what we can do together and what we're liable not to do together. And we thought it was a good change in tone. I had a private conversation with him, which encourages me that we'll continue to communicate. He raised lots of issues, but across the board is he came, he visited, and we look forward to doing things together.
Yep. Okay, so, it sounds like the olive branch was accepted.
Yeah, I guess so. I think that the chamber has been looking for an inroad, some way to cooperate with the administration. And like we've been saying, maybe this olive branch will give them a point to be able to start to work forward, to start getting jobs back on track, getting the economy back
on track.
The
American people want both sides to work together. So really, it benefits everyone that they do.
Utah Governor Gary Herbert, one of 21 American governors who are appealing to Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius for relief from Obamacare's health care mandates.
The states are concerned that, one, we haven't had much input on this Affordable Care Act, and now we have these mandates coming down to us, which are going to cost us a lot of money, and we don't think it's an efficient use of the taxpayers' dollars. And so we're asking for some flexibility. If you want us to, in fact, have these health care exchanges, there needs to be the ability of the states to, in fact, have flexibility to administer as they see fit within their own borders.
Governor, I think it was Justice Ginsburg who had said earlier today, there's no reason to speed this to the Supreme Court or for her court, the Supreme Court, to jump the appellate process and take this on right now. If that is indeed the thinking of the court, or that the court is inclined to wait this through appeals and see what happens, what do you think about that?
Well, that would be very disappointing to me as a governor. I can tell you that with the court decisions and what's taking place out there with the change in the House majority, states are very much uncertain as to what the future is. And that uncertainty is causing us to have a lot of concern about our own budgets and where we go from here. The courts can, in fact, give some finality to this if they would fast track it, and they should.
I don't know, Lori London. The tally seems to be getting higher and higher and higher. We now know of 733 waivers granted by the Obama administration to their signature piece of legislation, Obamacare. Now we've got 21 governors saying that these restrictions and these calls for their states to spend money that they don't have.
Okay, we've got 50 states, though.
I'm understanding that, but I mean, if the administration is making the case that Obamacare is exactly what the country needed, why 733 waivers and why are 21 states asking for relief?
I would imagine those are probably Republican-led states because this is a party line issue.
America's radio news continues. We're going to come up and we're going to talk about several things that are breaking right now in these United States, about a new poll talking about anybody in 2012 except for President Obama.
And air traffic controllers texting instead of directing traffic. We'll tell you what that's about.
And a mandate in one school district that says Arabic must be taken by its students. We'll tell you where that is as America's Radio News rolls on.
The campaign for 2012 has already started, and we're right in the middle of it. Keep it set right here to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
Fast, reliable, and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
If you want to get informed, this is the place to do it. America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Welcome to the show. Well, confident consumers have broken out their credit cards. Americans are putting more money on their cards after more than 2 years of cutting back, a sign they are gaining confidence in the economy. The first increase in credit card debt since the financial crisis hit helped to boost overall consumer borrowing 3% in December.
Egypt's vice president says the government has a plan and timetable for the peaceful transfer of power. Protesters called more demonstrations to show their campaign to oust President Hosni Mubarak's remains potent. With signs growing that the government may be gaining the upper hand in the struggle for power, Vice President Omar Suleiman promised no reprisals against protesters for their two-week campaign to eject Mubarak after 30 years in office.
A fire Monday gutted warehouses holding many of the elaborate costumes and extravagant floats for Rio's Carnival parade, destroying the dreams and hard work of thousands of mostly poor Brazilians who've toiled year-round to stage one of the world's most spectacular celebrations.
And as the Green Bay Packers savored their Super Bowl triumph, the NFL continued to deal with the fallout from problems with temporary seating at Cowboys Stadium that cost 400 ticket holders their seats at Sunday's game. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell called the situation, quote, obviously a failure on our part, and said the league would invite the affected fans to next year's Super Bowl in Indianapolis as guests of the National Football League.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg will not friend this guy, the Facebook founder, taking out a restraining order against a 31-year-old man who sent him Facebook messages threatening his safety and even tried to reach him in person. According to TMZ, a judge has ordered the man, Pradeep Munakanda, to keep 300 yards away from Zuckerberg, his girlfriend, and his sister. Police say the man went to several Facebook offices in an attempt to reach Zuckerberg and ask for money.
And what about this? Some students at a Mansfield, Texas ISD schools could soon be learning Arabic as a required language. The school district wants students to select schools to take Arabic language and culture classes as part of a federally funded grant. The Foreign Language Assistance Program was a grant awarded to the Mansfield ISD last summer by the U.S. Department of Education as part of a $1.3 million grant.
Well, Bill Clinton, or former President Bill Clinton, slammed Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann at the World Economic Forum in Davos and said that America does not have the best health care system in the world.
Michelle Bachmann said in her Tea Party response to President Obama, everybody knows we have the greatest health care system in the world. That is factually untrue. And so that's not true. You can get the best health care in the world in America if you're Bill Clinton or David Gergen or Turkey Faisal, but that's not the same thing as having the best system that works for everybody. So what I think America needs as much as anything else is to stop conducting its politics in a parallel universe divorced from reality, with no facts. And I say that, and look, I would make everybody, every American here mad, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, if we talked about what I thought ought to be done.
Well, we do have a multi-trillion dollar health care system that's in trouble regardless.
Right, and the
alternative needs to be done.
Yeah, the alternatives being used in other countries that have socialized medicine, like Canada and Great Britain, are very much wanting. That's why folks that need immediate treatment come from those countries here to the United States to get their treatment. So what's being done around the west of the world isn't exactly something we should emulate. What's being done right now is not sustainable. So somewhere we've got to find a different solution. In the meantime, in an interview with Bush-era Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, ABC's Diane Sawyer and George Stephanopoulos, they quizzed him about the troop surge.
I don't recall Bremer ever suggesting that until he was leaving office and he raised the question. And we sent it to the Joint Chiefs and the chairman and the commanders, and they looked at it and came back and said, no, they feel that's the right number.
Ambassador Blackwell made that representation to the National Security Council in September of 2003, I believe, with Ambassador Bremer sitting right beside him. It's documented in Bob Woodward's book.
Bob Woodward wasn't there.
So you're saying it didn't happen?
I'm saying I don't remember what you're talking about. I do remember that that the question was raised repeatedly. Do we need more troops? Do we need fewer troops? Where do we need them, and what ought they to be doing? That question was raised in the National Security Council with the president, with the members of the council, with the combatant commander, with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And the way you characterized it is not quite right. You said they were reduced. In fact, they were not increased. We had something like 450,000 troops prepared to go in with off-ramps, although they did not go in if the combatant commander felt they weren't needed.
Even in 2006, when President Bush finally decided to send in more troops, in December 2006, you had a memo where that recommendation was below the line. So can you now concede that what Senator McCain said last week was correct, that had you stayed in office, there would have been defeat in Iraq and the surge would have taken
place? Oh, no, absolutely not. McCain and I are not a good fit.
I think that is the understatement of the decade.
McCain and I are not a good fit.
Those two, like this, butting heads constantly under the Bush administration. I think Rummy's taking his lumps properly so, because, you know, he was adamantly opposed to the surge strategy that ended up actually working.
Well, AOL stockholders now raising their eyebrows at AOL's $300 million purchase of the Huffington Post yesterday. It's interesting to see what will happen with this. Later, AOL CEO Tim Huffington addressed the media about the purchase.
Tim Armstrong, you've had declines in revenues recently, declines in ad sales. Ken Auletta of The New Yorker, who helps us out often on media issues, called this purchase a, quote, a Hail Mary pass to demonstrate that AOL could mount a comeback from the near dead. Is that what this is?
No, I've known Ken for years, and I think we probably have a big difference of opinion. I think today is a great day for the future of AOL. I think it's a great day for Huffington Post. And, you know, we're able to serve 120 million users roughly in the United States, 270 million globally, with great content from the Huffington Post as well as our properties. And we are big believers in the next phase of the Internet is about content. So I think today is a monumental day for us on strategy, on point with what we said we were going to do a year and a half ago.
And Arianna Huffington described the plan as Jeffersonian.
Jeffersonian, did she? Yeah, there are reports out there that the backers of the Huffington Post were looking for a way out. There's also a report out there that they're going to form AOL and the Huffington Post, a liberal news source. So good luck with them on that. I hope they have a tremendous amount of success. In the meantime, the chaos in Egypt is bringing all kinds of stories. And Fox News reporter Greg Pelcott and cameraman Olaf Wieg were blindfolded. They were beaten in Egypt and had to be hospitalized last week. Now they are home, safe and sound, thankfully, and they're speaking out for the first time about their ordeal.
I got grabbed, and I thought, that moment, I thought, okay, I'm really now in trouble. And, you know, it was immediately sort of four or five people grabbing hold of you.
People are all over him. Within about 30 seconds, people are all over us, and that's when our life or death struggle began.
And I thought, you know, surely I can talk some reason into somebody. You know, surely this isn't, they're not going to kill us right here. And then the more they hit you, the more you realized, oh, actually, they probably could right now.
The whole time you're getting pummeled with open hands, with fists, with
And it
sticks.
Sounds like this is continuing, Chris. It's, from what I'm hearing, you know, there are still arrests being made even as they're calling for reform, as the government says it's calling for reform.
And we've documented the goings-on for journalists over there in Egypt. That is just outrageously dangerous duty. Best of luck to everybody over there trying to cover the chaos in the Middle East. Back here at home, America's Radio News continues to roll on. President Obama, he's calling for more spending. $53 billion in spending. We'll tell you where he wants to put it.
And former MSNBC host Keith Olbermann has a new home. We'll tell you where.
And Lanny Davis, he is a Washington lawyer, former special counsel to President William Jefferson Clinton. He's coming in next to talk about all things politics right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Thank you.
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Get ready to get informed. 6 minutes past the top of the hour. This is America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Here's what's happening.
I'm hoping that all of you are thinking what you can do for America. Ask yourselves what you can do to hire more American workers.
President Obama invokes the spirit of JFK in a speech to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
For the past 5.5 months, we have been in a condition where a black box has been applied to my life.
The founder of WikiLeaks cries foul.
I think we've had the longest period of over 9% unemployment since the Great Depression.
A potential presidential candidate sounds an alarm on the future of America.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest breaking news.
And the news is breaking fast and furiously all over the world and here in the United States. Glad to be with you, Lori London.
Great to be with you, Chris Salcedo. And thanks to all of you for being with us. It's Tuesday, February 8th. A government investigation into Toyota safety problems finding no electronic faults to account for reports of sudden unintentional acceleration. Two mechanical safety defects previously ID'd by the government, sticking accelerator pedals and gas pedals that became trapped in floor mats, the only known causes for the reports of runaway Toyotas.
President Obama calling for a 6-year, $53 billion investment in high-speed rail as he seeks to use infrastructure spending to jumpstart job creation. If Congress approves the plan, the money would go toward developing or improving trains that travel up to 250 miles per hour and connecting existing rail lines to new projects. The White House wouldn't say where the money for the new program would come from.
Well, galvanized by the emotional words of a freed Google executive, thousands of Egyptians again filling Cairo's Tahrir Square, dismissing the embattled regime's pledges of constitutional reforms. The crowd swelling as the 15th day of the revolt progresses.
Let's get on over to America's Radio Newsline. They're waiting for us. Lanny Davis is the Washington lawyer and former special counsel to President Clinton. He served as a member of President George W. Bush's Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. Lanny, welcome back to America's Radio News.
Hi, Lanny.
Hi, how are you?
Great to be with you, sir. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about the president's visit to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. It seems your boss, your former boss, President Clinton, seemed to have a real understanding with the business community. Do you think this president really gets it?
Well, I think he does get it. I think in the first 2 years, he didn't do the outreach and used rhetoric that probably made it more difficult. But yes, I do think he gets it. I think as a state senator, he was certainly friendly to the business community. And as a U.S. senator, he was certainly friendly to the business community. People in Illinois would tell you that. His first 2 years as president, not too different than President Clinton's first 2 years, he got himself at least perceived as being to the left and out of the grand center that commands American politics. And I just think he's going back to really where he already was, but he allowed himself to be, I think, captured in a perception that really wasn't accurate as being too far to the left.
Now, everybody's, or a lot of folks, actually, I should say, are saying that the president focused too much on health care and he should have focused on jobs. Now, this issue obviously is not going away, but obviously we have a big problem with our health care in the current state that it's in. So what do you think of the whole health care reform and the battle that's ensuing?
Well, first of all, I agree with the point you just made. I've been constantly mystified as to, I'm in support of the president's health care plan strongly. In fact, I supported the public option, which ended up being too much for a lot of fellow Democrats because it would have provided a government-sponsored program to offer competition to the private sector. But the point is, 85% of the country that benefits from this program has never been really sold on it. Only the 15%, the 33 million uninsured, have clear benefits in the message communicated by the Democrats and especially President Obama.
So why aren't people sold on it? Why is everyone so against it?
Exactly for the reason that we've oriented our arguments towards the 15% uninsured rather than explaining people like you and me probably have insurance, why this is absolutely necessary for us. We no longer have to go to bed at night. If we lose our job, we're going to be uninsured. We no longer have to go to bed at night worrying if we get really sick, we can get canceled. If we have a pre-existing condition, we're never going to be insured. We can sleep at night knowing that when our children are sick, we don't have to go to an emergency room.
Hey, Lanny,
everyone in America can now be comfortable knowing they have health insurance.
Well, Lanny, you just articulated the ultimate liberal goal of having the United States government competing with the private sector in the health insurance arena. But do you see where some conservatives might have a problem with the U.S. saying, okay, which has never been done in American history, where the government is competing with its own citizenry, its own private sector, for one. And then number two, not only are we going to compete with you, we're going to tax you to make you fund your own competition in government. Do you see where that could be a little bit of a problem for conservatives when the people in government want to ride on the backs of those that are creating things, actually creating something in the private sector?
I absolutely could see that if it were true. But the irony is that this proposal by President Obama went in the conservative direction, was the original Republican Bob Dole proposal to completely privatize the national health care system and have no government competing. So the public option would have been a government program similar to what all members of Congress have under the federal employee health insurance system, and that was taken out of the bill. So what we have now is an entirely private system which has competition among private sector insurance companies, no government-owned insurance option whatsoever. It's all private. So I think the misnomer here is this was a government takeover. In fact, it's an empowerment of insurance companies who have to compete with each other in the private sector.
All right, Lanny Davis, Washington lawyer and former special counsel to President William Jefferson Clinton. He also served as a member of President George W. Bush's Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. Lanny, good friend of the program. Thanks for being on.
Thank you so much.
All right, coming up here on America's Radio News, is it a Democrat civil war? It's the Pelosi Democrats versus the moderate Democrats. We'll give you the story.
And air traffic controllers texting instead of directing traffic? We'll tell you what that's about.
And Los Angeles County wants you to take ecstasy safely. That story comes your way next on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The heartbeat of America beats first right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
Get ready to get informed. You're tuned into America's Radio News at 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Glad to have you along. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. Well, three teenage boys were shot to death in the Mexican border city of Ciudad Juarez, as at least two of them U.S. citizens and high school students in Texas. The boys killed Saturday while looking at cars at a dealership in the city right across the border from El Paso, Texas. One was found inside a white Jeep Cherokee, the other in a courtyard. There are no leads or suspects yet.
Is it a making of a civil war in the Democrat Party? Nine-term Representative Jane Harman, a Democrat from California, announced her resignation yesterday, a move that is being seen by some experts as a sign that the centrist was chafing under a more limited role in the newly Republican House. She's leaving to take over as president of Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, a think tank that tries to connect the world through research and technology into public policy. Yesterday on Fox News, another Blue Dog Democrat, Jason Altmaier, talked with Neil Cavuto on how Blue Dog Democrats are being all but ignored by the leadership in the Democrat Party.
A meat producer in Southern California recalling over 3,000 pounds of ground beef they fear may be contaminated with E. coli. The USDA says no illnesses have been reported from the bulk ground beef and patties sold by Pico Rivera-based American Food Service.
Only in Los Angeles, amid ongoing debate over safety and security measures at rave dance parties held at the Los Angeles Coliseum, county health officials have quietly launched a campaign to offer guidelines for safe use of MDMA, more popularly known as ecstasy. Officials plan to distribute leaflets such as the one that was outlined on a couple of websites about an upcoming event with tips on ways to avoid overdosing on what the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration classifies along with PCP and mescaline as a Schedule 1 narcotic.
Well, every couple wants their family to be there when they tie the knot. Well, for Ahmed Zafon and Ola Hamid, it was the family of protesters wanting to topple Egypt's president. They held their wedding ceremony in Cairo's Tahrir Square. Thousands of protesters were there to cheer them on, whistling, and as the it was announced over the speakers that they had been married Sunday.
And speaking about all the turmoil in Egypt, yesterday, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton outlined the Obama administration's plan for proceeding through this Egyptian transition.
Today we learned that the Muslim Brotherhood has decided to participate, which suggests that they are now involved in the dialogue that we have encouraged. We're going to wait and see how this develops, but we've been very clear about what we expect.
Well, we'll see what happens with the Muslim Brotherhood. I know there are a lot of fears with this group, but I understand it's a very small percentage of the majority there. Well, Congressman Ron Paul says it's time to stop sending all foreign aid to countries like Egypt because we're not getting any bang for our buck.
I think we have proven our point, but it's a pretty expensive way to learn a lesson. But I'm not even sure we've learned our lesson. You know, next week or next month or so, there will be a new dictator over there. And I don't think the money will quit. I think they'll keep sending the money. And then there'll be a new group come in and rip us off. The American people should know about this. They should object to it. But, you know, when we're prosperous, they don't seem to mind too much. But now that we're in trouble, maybe they'll wake up and say, $60, $70 billion to people who rip us off? Maybe we ought to quit. But I'm afraid they're only going to quit when we go totally bankrupt and our monetary system doesn't work at all.
I think most of our money is actually going to the military, and
right.
The military is, a staunch ally of the U.S., and we can't just pull the plug. I don't think it's that simple.
Well, Congressman Paul is also reflecting the need here in the United States to get a hold of this fiscal policy that we have, which is really out of control with $14.2 trillion and climbing every single day. I don't think that our solution by itself is over there with funding with Egypt, but I think, you know, hey, as long as they're looking around for ways to cut, I think that the American people should at least have a second look at that. In an interview with CBS News, liberal screenwriter Aaron Sorkin took some more shots at Sarah Palin, calling her dumb and in need of therapy.
I have a big problem with people who glamorize dumbness and demonize education and intellect. And I'm giving a pretty good description of Sarah Palin right now.
He seems to be having a second career these days, going after Sarah Palin. In an essay for the Huffington Post, he called her a witless bully.
Sarah Palin, she needs a therapist, okay? We need the smartest guys, the best PhDs around, to be solving these problems. I don't have any patience for the glamorization of dumbness.
Okay, well, I guess the memo didn't get to the extreme left wing, because aren't we supposed to be having a smarter dialogue? I mean, this man talks about intelligence, but all he's doing is throwing out invective.
That's true. Dumb doesn't need to be used in the word, but with all due respect, you know, she has been making a lot of factual errors
statements. Let's talk about those specific things, and let's talk about some policy where he has some differences with Ms. Palin.
Agree.
But let's not just start calling names to people. That doesn't get us anywhere.
Well, the Muslim cleric, Imam Rauf, he was the one that proposed the construction of a mosque near Ground Zero in New York, has weighed in with his support for the Egyptian uprising with CNN's Wolf Blitzer last night.
We are with those who want freedom and democracy and human rights and gender equality in Egypt. This is the issue which the Arab world needs.
So you're with the demonstrators who are trying to get Mubarak out?
No doubt about it. I think the vast majority of the Egyptian population wants to see that happen. We want to see what we have in any other country, term limits for our leaders and the rights of people. And what we're seeing right now, Wolf, is a potential pivot in U.S.-Muslim world relations. If you remember, in 2009, President Obama went and gave a very important speech in Cairo in which he said he looked for a new beginning with the Muslim world.
That was in June of 2009.
Exactly. It'll be 2 years this June.
I think for folks over in Egypt, they're looking for support from America on their uprising. I don't think that this endorsement from Mr. Rauf was actually what they were looking for.
What are they looking for?
I think they're not looking for such a controversial figure to endorse their movement is the point I was making.
Yeah, they may not see him as a controversial figure.
America's Radio News continues. We're taking you live to the streets of Egypt. Coming up next, Heather Murdoch, an award-winning foreign correspondent for The Washington Times. We'll see what the situation is on the ground in Egypt.
And Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg apparently has a stalker.
And one state moving to nullify Obamacare. Is it yours? We'll tell you coming up next. As America's Radio News rolls on.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News. Give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
34 minutes past the top of the hour. Hear about it now or read about it tomorrow. This is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Here's what's happening.
I'm hoping that all of you are thinking what you can do for America. Ask yourselves what you can do to hire more American workers.
President Obama invokes the spirit of JFK in a speech to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
For the past 5.5 months, we have been in a condition where a black box has been applied to my life.
The founder of WikiLeaks cries foul.
I think we've had the longest period of over 9% unemployment since the Great Depression.
A potential presidential candidate sounds an alarm on the future of America.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe for all the latest breaking news.
Turned out to be a halfway decent day in the nation's capital, Lori London, but around the rest of the nation, they're bracing for more snow. I know the Midwest and parts of Texas looking for snow tonight.
Those poor folks out there while we're seeing the sunshine finally. Chris Salcedo, great to be with all of you as well. It's Tuesday, February 8th. Well, a government investigation into Toyota's safety problems has found no electronic flaws to account for reports of sudden unintentional acceleration. Now, two mechanical safety defects previously ID'd by the government, sticking accelerator pedals and gas pedals that can become trapped in floor mats, are the only known causes for the reports of runaway Toyotas.
One state is moving to nullify Obamacare. Even though Idaho's attorney general says it's unconstitutional, the Idaho legislature is moving forward with a bill that would declare the new federal health care law null and void within the state's boundaries. You can liken this to the ratcheting up of the battle against Obamacare, as its critics refer to it. The most common line of attack now being taken by 26 states is to sue the federal government, saying it violates the Constitution to force people to buy health insurance by 2014 or face penalties.
Well, galvanized by the emotional words of a freed Google executive, thousands of Egyptians have filled into Cairo's Tahrir Square, dismissing the embattled regime's pledges of constitutional reforms, the crowd swelling as the 15th day of the revolt continues to progress.
We have the reports coming out of Egypt today. They're conflicting. Let's go to Egypt right now. Head over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Heather Murdoch, an award-winning foreign correspondent for The Washington Times. Heather, welcome back to America's Radio News.
Hi, Heather.
Heather here. In the meantime, our Secretary of State, Hillary Rodham Clinton, she outlined the Obama administration's plan for proceeding through the Egyptian transition. Have a listen.
Is a great country with a very storied past of 7,000 years. And this is one of those moments in its history where the Egyptian people must themselves determine their future. And we have made it one of our principles in responding to what they themselves are doing, that the voices of the protesters demanding freedom are legitimate and should not be suppressed and, in fact, should be listened to. But we recognize, as do many of those who are now stepping forward from the opposition, civil society, political factions, that the country has to come together and reach an agreement about how best to proceed, because there are many ways this could go that are not in the best interests of Egypt, the region, or the United States. At the end, we know we want to see a peaceful and orderly transition. How we get there is going to be up to the Egyptians themselves.
Secretary of State Hillary Wadham Clinton laying out the administration's, if you're going to surmise it, it's kind of a wait-and-see type strategy.
Certainly is. Well, we have made reconnection with Heather Murdoch, award-winning foreign correspondent for The Washington Times. She is in Egypt live at this moment. Heather, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
What are you seeing on the ground there today? How are things looking today, day 15?
Well, on day 15 in Tahrir Square in Cairo, it has never been more crowded. There are more people than ever, and a lot of the people are new faces, which is really interesting. There's a lot more families than in the past, and also a lot more security surrounding the square.
Yeah, that conflicts with the reports we're getting here stateside. Some people saying that perhaps the Mubarak administration is going to weather these protests, and that some say they're winning this. In other words, I've heard that put in a couple of editorial slants. So you're saying that the protests are not dying out, they're not petering out, they're actually staying strong. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. And there's no doubt on the ground that the protesters, at least in numbers and enthusiasm, are growing. Yesterday there was no protest, and the square was packed all day. And, I mean, keep in mind, I'm also speaking specifically about downtown Cairo. There might be more information around the country that I'm not seeing. But in the epicenter of the protest, it's growing, and they're expecting it to be even bigger on Friday.
Any, you know, communication with them as far as what they see happening, as far as Mubarak leaving?
Yes, I've been talking to people all day about this. People believe pretty much universally that he will leave before September in the coming weeks. They believe that the protests will continue to grow until he does leave. And they're also really excited about the changes that have happened so far. And they believe that what they're telling me is that no Egyptian government, including this one, in the future will be able to operate without listening to the voice of the people.
Heather, we heard earlier in the show from Greg Palcott, he's the Fox News reporter and his cameraman, that were blindfolded, assaulted, beaten up. Paint for us a picture. How are journalists from other nations being received? How are you being received as you're trying to report on the goings-on in Cairo there in Egypt?
Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. Last week on Wednesday, when pro-Mubarak supporters came out in force, it was really scary for journalists all over Egypt. A lot of people were attacked, harassed, including myself, and arrested, beaten. And then after that, there was a considerable amount of distrust for journalists in Cairo and in Alexandria, where I was then. Rumors about Israeli spies came from state television. But now that's kind of died down, and once again we're being welcomed into Tahrir Square, and protesters are more and more over the past day and a half willing to speak to us, give us our names, and are now once again enthusiastic about talking to the press.
Now, I understand, have you watched state TV there and any of the propaganda that's coming out?
I've watched a little bit, but most of the things that people are talking about, I've actually heard from the mouths of protesters. They're telling me the state TV says that they're spies, that they're vagabonds, that they're being paid by foreign entities to sit around and chant. One of the great jokes in the square is to eat Kentucky Fried Chicken. Kentucky Fried Chicken is closed, of course.
All right, Heather Murdoch, award-winning foreign correspondent for The Washington Times, coming to you live on America's Radio News from Cairo, Egypt. Heather, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again soon, all right? Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks so much.
You betcha.
Bye-bye.
Coming up here on America's Radio News, some conservatives calling it karma. Michael Moore to Harvey Weinstein, you screwed me. We'll give you the entire report coming up.
And a mid-air collision, close call.
And confession, there's an app for that, believe it or not. It's all coming your way here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The campaign for 2012 has already started, and we're right in the middle of it.
Keep it set right here to America's Radio News.
For
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place for that. It's America's Radio News. Happy you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. Well, the feds are investigating charges that New York air traffic controllers endanger passengers by working just 3 hours per shift and acting like slackers, chatting, texting, even watching movies when they should be monitoring planes. This, according to the New York Post. At times, so few, they say, are at their posts that a single controller has to do the job of two or three and track 15 aircraft simultaneously, which they say is too many, according to allegations filed by a supervisor. These concerns were raised 3 days before controllers allowed an American Airlines jet to nearly collide with two military cargo planes over the Atlantic.
Some conservatives might be calling it karma. Michael Moore claims movie mogul Harvey Weinstein and his brother Robert cheated him out of millions of dollars in profits for the movie Fahrenheit 9/11 by secretly diverting profits, even using Michael's money to fly one of the Weinstein brothers to Europe on a private jet. In a lawsuit filed today in yesterday in Los Angeles County Superior Court and obtained by the entertainment website TMZ, Moore's company, Westside Productions, claims Moore had a deal with the Weinstein company, the Fellowship Adventure Group, to split the profits 50-50 from the flick. In the legal docs filed by Moore's celebrity lawyer, Larry Stein, he alleges that Weinstein's used the bogus accounting methods to hide the true amount of profits from Westside.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg will not friend this guy, Chris. Facebook founder has taken out a restraining order against a 31-year-old man who sent him Facebook messages threatening his safety and even tried to reach him in person. This according to TMZ, which says a judge has ordered the man, Pradeep Manukanda, that's his name, to keep 300 yards away from Zuckerberg, his girlfriend, and even his sister. They say Manukanda went to several Facebook offices in an attempt to reach Zuckerberg, asking for what? Money.
Confession. There's an app for that. An iPhone app aimed at helping Catholics through confession and encouraging lapsed followers back to the faith has been sanctioned by the Catholic Church in the U.S. Can you believe this? Confession, a Roman Catholic app thought to be the first to be approved by a church authority, walks Catholics through the sacrament and contains what the company behind the program describes as a, quote, personalized examination of conscience for each user.
Holy moly.
Holy moly, indeed.
We're getting a little bit too weird with the technology, I think. Well, Senator Lindsey Graham tells CNN he doesn't yet know who will be the best Republican horse to back in 2012, but he says President Obama's beatable.
I'm for the most conservative person who is electable. We're going to have
and
a
that
real
would be who?
Well, I don't know yet. You're good at your job. I really don't know. Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina tell a story of the Republican primary world. Iowa's a caucus state. New Hampshire is sort of a purple primary. South Carolina is a conservative state, but you have a lot of people coming into the primary. Conservatism sells. It's a center-right nation. But the nominee for the party is going to have to win the independent voter at the end of the day. They're paying attention to Republicans because of the overreach by Democrats. We're back in the game because our Democratic friends sort of blew it. And we got a chance now to reengage with the American people. The health care debate, I think, will define 2012. I want to repeal it and start over. Foreign policy could become a good issue. The detainee problems this country faces have not really been addressed. Reading terrorists their Miranda rights. Things like that can shape up the debate between the Republican nominee and President Obama. I think he is beatable, but for our party to win, our nominee has got to get those independent voters who are center-right. They're not in a right ditch. They're not in the left ditch. So we'll see what happens.
It's early.
It is early. And historically speaking, I mean, the incumbent really has the advantage, but we'll see where things go.
Yeah, nobody thought George W., or a lot of people didn't think George W. would make it to a second term, and he sure did.
And the big factor is, of course, how's the economy going to be doing here in about a year?
If it keeps growing and getting better and gets on even firmer ground, then...
Right, exactly. And then he has a pretty good chance of re-election. In the meantime, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, he's not happy about the current state of the United States. And last night he expressed his own thoughts on the current state of affairs in our fine nation.
I think we're, as a country, in real trouble.
I think we've had the longest period of over 9% unemployment since the Great Depression. The news last month that we have 45% African-American teenage unemployment should sober every American. We have real dangers in the world. The fact that 126 people have been indicted in the U.S. for plotting terrorism in the last 2 years, what's going on in Egypt, Afghanistan, none of this should make us feel good. And I think having somebody who tells the truth, you know, sometimes telling the truth is polarizing. Camus wrote that a man who says 2 + 2 = 4 can sometimes be killed because the authorities can't stand the truth. And so sometimes what Reagan did, and I frankly try to study Reagan and Thatcher and Lincoln because I think they were the great truth tellers of modern politics. Sometimes you can tell the truth, people in the establishment go nuts because it's not the truth they want to hear.
And the big truth that our lawmakers are confronting is $14.2 trillion of truth that needs to be addressed. And I think that's what Newt was trying to point out.
And I think the truth is that we're listening to a potential presidential candidate.
That is for sure.
Speaking of presidents, President Obama spoke yesterday to the Chamber of Commerce amid a tumultuous relationship with the business community. He said he wanted to be more neighborly.
It is good to be here today at the Chamber of Commerce. I'm here in the interest of being more neighborly. I strolled over from across the street, maybe if we had brought over a fruitcake when I first moved in, we would have gotten off to a better start. But I'm going to make up for it. Over the last 2 years, I've sought advice from many of you as we were grappling with the worst recession most of us have ever known. It's a recession that led to some very difficult decisions. For many of you, that meant restructuring and branch closings and layoffs that I know were very painful to make. But I'm here today because I am convinced, as Tom mentioned in his introduction, that we can and we must work together.
If the president can pull that off, but going back to his reelection prospects, I think he has a good shot at reelection. If he can pull that off and make his actions match his rhetoric, I think he has a good shot.
Well, the head of the chamber seemed to be encouraged.
Yeah, okay. CNN's Joy Behar, she sat down with none other than Weird Al Yankovic, who talked about all the musicians he had parodied over the years and those rock stars that weren't exactly amused.
Michael Jackson gave you permission.
You know, he was a huge supporter early on. I mean, back before Eat It, I was really more of a cult figure. Very few people knew, you know, who or what this Weird Al guy was about. And we thought it would be highly improbable that Michael Jackson would give us his blessing. But, you know, we thought, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. And he actually had a great sense of humor. And there exists somewhere in this universe a contract with my signature next to Michael's saying we're the co-writers of Eat It. So,
I
and then
see.
Once I had his stamp of approval, a lot of other artists were like, well, if Michael thinks it's okay, maybe it's okay.
So it shows you that Michael was casual about his, about giving it over. That's nice.
He had a great
him.
Sense of humor, yeah.
Right. But Paul McCartney said no. Why?
Well, I hate
the
to
Prince
say
Prince said no. Led Zeppelin said no.
Well, okay. Okay. Paul McCartney, we'll start with that. He turned me down for a parody years ago. I did want to do a parody of Live and Let Die called Chicken Pot Pie.
Uh-huh.
Brilliant, I know.
But for Prince, you could have done Little Red Pervert.
I could. but back to Paul, because I don't want any to besmirch Paul's name, because Paul was a great sport. He said, I'd love for you to do a parody, but don't do anything about the consumption of animal flesh, because I'm a vegetarian, and, you know, that's not cool, and I couldn't think of a better idea. In fact, I got to direct Paul McCartney last year. I did a 3D short film called Al's Brain in 3D. Paul was nice enough to make a cameo, so if I do nothing else in life, I can proudly say that I've directed Paul McCartney.
And eat more broccoli.
Weird Al Yankovic, a musical genius, and I'm saying that in all sincerity. He really was one of the more creative, back in the 80s, very creative out of parodies. And you know what? He was my first concert. The first person I ever saw in concert, band or otherwise.
Interesting first choice, Chris.
Weird Al Yankovic at the Del Mar Fair in San Diego. So there you go. Coming up tomorrow on America's Radio News, Mr. Obama, the President of the United States, coming out with more proposed spending. We'll feel the fallout from conservatives and the GOP and what they think about all that.
And protests in Egypt's getting bigger. Demonstrators say they're not leaving until President Mubarak does.
We have got you covered right here. For Lori London, I'm Chris Salcedo. This is America's Radio News. We'll see you back here for a Wednesday. This is where the nation's news breaks.